Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 10th of October, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with filmmaker Beth Edwards about her film, The Yupik Way, scheduled for here on 360 North on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. We'll find out about Remus Malianis and his trip of sailing and trip across the world. We'll find out about the Alaska's Lipo Photo Contest with Jenny Frimlin. And we'll talk to Leslie Wood about the Juneau Pride Chorus's Film Festival. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for the rest of today, mostly cloudy skies. Forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain. Forecast for Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain. And a chance of rain predicted for Tuesday night and Wednesday.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Voting in a special election for the leader of one of the nation's largest tribes is now complete. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, there are still thousands of absentee ballots left to be counted by the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma.
The Election Commission for the Cherokee Nation says Tribal Council member Bill John Baker leads former Principal Chief Chad Smith by 22% in early returns. The commission says it has already counted ballots cast in person from each precinct and from walk-in voting. Smith and Baker were each twice declared the winner in a June 24th election. The Cherokee Nation Supreme Court ruled the original election results were too close to call. Voting was extended through Saturday to satisfy a federal court judge concerned that descendants of former slaves owned by members of the Cherokee Nation would not be allowed to vote. Tribal election officials say they will be counting the absentee ballots Monday and Tuesday. They say it could be Wednesday before unofficial results are known. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Norman, Oklahoma.
As the nation recognizes Columbus Day, South Dakota celebrates Native American Day, which it has done for the last 21 years. Yet, some in the Native community say a handful of local businesses and organizations still fail to recognize the holiday. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Charles Michael Ray has more.
Tim Gallego is an Oglala Sioux tribal resident and consultant for the Native Sun newspaper. Gallego says some local retailers and national chains in South Dakota still advertise Columbus Day sales rather than recognizing Native American Day.
All the media needs to get behind and really start educating and promoting it.
Retailers reply that national chains have their advertising done elsewhere and don't always tailor their ads for South Dakota. Gallego notes that Native American Day came about in South Dakota only after Native people pushed then-Governor George Mickelson to make the change. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
An organization in Seattle, Washington is helping Native toddlers get the tools they need to succeed in school. Only 44% of Native youth graduate from high school compared to 63% of all students in Seattle. As Eilish O'Neill reports, a new program has goals of changing that statistic.
This week, United Indians of All Tribes, a Seattle organization, is launching a parent-child home program. Tina Fox, the program coordinator, describes its design.
We will be providing two home visits per week. Each home visit is going to be about half an hour. The first home visit, we will be bringing the toy or the book to the parents and really kind of modeling the playtime, the reading.
Amy Meredith, an assistant professor of speech and language pathology at Washington State University, says that reading to toddlers helps them down the road.
When you're reading to your child, they get print awareness. So it's like, okay, so this is a book. And when we read from left to right. And when we get to the end of the page, we turn the page, and here's the next page, and the story continues. So even reading to your kid teaches an awful lot.
Meredith adds that other important skills for toddlers are rhyming, dividing words into syllables, and identifying similar sounds. Tina Fox of United Indians hopes that her organization's new program will help Seattle's Native American toddlers develop pre-literacy skills such as these.
So by hopefully engaging our kids in their education and taking ownership of it, what we're hoping to do is to really try to reduce the dropout rates.
For National Native News, I'm Alicia O'Neill in Seattle, Washington.
On this day in 2010, Hopi radio station KUYI celebrated its 10th anniversary. The event in Arizona included Hopi musicians and other Native artists. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C. and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, defending Native American interests throughout the United States.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is calling to us from Louisville, Kentucky. She's the filmmaker Beth Edwards, who shot a film called The Ubiquity. It's going to be on 360 North Wednesday night at 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock and also Sunday night at 7 p.m. Beth, thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
So this film was shot in location in Hooper Bay. So for the listeners who do not know where Hooper Bay is, could you educate us, please?
Yes. Hooper Bay is in southwestern Alaska, and it is a little bit less than 600 miles west of Anchorage.
How did you get there initially?
I flew to Anchorage and then to Bethel, and then I took a plane to Hooper.
And why?
Why did I choose Hooper Bay?
Mm-hmm.
I was in a class at the Brooks Institute of Photography. We had to make a documentary, and I knew that I wanted to do a story on Native Americans, but I wanted it to be a little different. And I knew I wanted to come to Alaska, and I had never seen anything, any other stories from Hooper, and I was sort of doing some research online, and they had had a fire in their village, and that's sort of how I started learning about Hooper Bay, and then I sort of read everything I could find and really wanted to go.
Hooper Bay has been through a number of issues, especially the contamination of their land and water and their animals that they survive on for subsistence. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yes. They are downstream from Cape Ramondanoff, and the Air Force had dumped all sort of batteries and gasoline and oil and all sorts of things into the water, and then now they are having issues with higher levels of cancer in their village as a result of eating the fish and the animals for drinking the water, and it's a very large issue facing them. There are some people in the village that are doing research on this. I think when I was there, it was being done through Purdue University. It may have switched now, but they were sending out samples to the university to have everything, to have their fish tested.
This film was just completed last year. When did you start producing it, in 2007?
Yes. I was in the village actually around this time. I was in the month of October, and the last 2 weeks of September and then all of October, that's when I was in the village, and then I spent a week in Anchorage.
Had you ever been to a rural area before, like Hooper Bay? And
I hadn't. It was completely different than anything I had ever known. When I was there, they didn't have running water, and they had the honey bucket system. Some houses now do have running water, some do not. But when I was there, none of the houses did, except for, I think the teacher's housing did. And so that was an adjustment as well, sort of getting used to that. But once you did, I mean, it was obviously okay, but it was an adjustment at first, but then I really learned to like it. Everything was a little bit slower, and it felt like you just had more time in your day, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's a very, 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 very candid film. It's very sobering as well. How did you get the people to open up like they did?
Well, at first it was really hard. I had spoken with a person who I thought was going to help me meet people in the village, but he went moose hunting for 5 of the 6 weeks that I was there. So what I did was I just walked every day. I walked all around the village every day for hours. And it was all the children. The kids came up to me, and we played, and we would talk, and I would let them use the camera. And they are sort of the ones who got me into the houses and to meet the people. And I think little by little, as people saw who I was and learned to trust me more. And then it was two sisters who are elders in the village, Helen and Neva, two amazingly strong, just lovely women. And I think once they agreed to be interviewed, then it was everyone else did as well. And I don't think I could have ever asked for anything more than what people were willing to speak to me about. So.
It's amazing that you got as far as you did, especially with the young man making an alcoholic beverage himself in a dry village.
Yes. That it isn't actually the man who's speaking. I want to make that clear in case I don't want him to be in trouble. It was actually other people who were making it. But, yes, I did ask many, many people if I could to film them. And finally, there were people who agreed to let me do that.
Tell me about the process of making the film.
It started out as a school project, and when I came back to edit the film while still in school, I was just kind of really overwhelmed because it was a huge adjustment from going to the village to then I was in school in near Los Angeles, California. So it was just this huge adjustment period back into being in a city. And so I was just overwhelmed. And so I turned in, you know, the project for class. I wasn't really happy with it. And so I just kind of let it sit for about a year. And then just before I was getting ready to graduate, I had a professor who came to me and said, you know, I really think you need to do something with this. And so I started editing it in my spare time, and then a little bit over a year, just sort of here and there, like maybe like for a 1 week, and then a couple months later I would edit it again. And finally I finished it, and then I didn't really expect for it to go far. My goal was I just really wanted people to be aware of Hooper Bay, and if there was any way to sort of get assistance to the village, that was my goal. But it did well. Like, I just entered it in film festivals, and then it sort of took off from there. And it's sort of shocking to me how far it's come.
To you, what are the most critical challenges the people of Hooper Bay face?
I think there are many issues. You know, one is obviously substance abuse, but really I think it's cultural identity. I think it's very hard to... I think there's just, you know, there's loss of their language. You know, they have the Yupik language program now in their schools and the Yupik immersion program, which is wonderful, but I think there needs to be just so much more done because as the elders are dying, they're losing their culture, and that's so horrible. And I know it's being faced all across Alaska and everywhere else. I just think more needs to be done to protect their culture, but also it seems to be a choice. Like if you, in my opinion, if you leave the village, you know, if you want to go to college, there's really no sort of job to go back to. And I think that's horrible because, you know, the village needs educated people to help them to grow, but it seems to be a choice. Like if you leave the village, and that means you're leaving your culture, and I don't think it needs to be that. But I really just don't know what the answer to that is, and I just think it's such an overwhelming problem.
As you noted in the film's beginning, the majority of the population is under the age of 18.
Yes, they are. And I asked a lot of the children, you know, I was like, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you know, and they were like, I want to be a police officer, I want to be a nurse, I want to be a teacher. And I think that would be wonderful, you know, for them to do those things and to come back to the village and have those jobs. It's just that some of the jobs they want to do aren't in the village. You know, the village doesn't have them yet.
I'm talking to Beth Edwards, the filmmaker who shot the film The Yupik Way. It's going to be on TV 360 North Wednesday night at 8 o'clock and also at 11 o'clock and Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Beth, what do you want people to take away from the film after they've seen it?
Just how amazing the people who live there are. They are a very... One of the tribal administrators in the film says they aren't a very rich people monetarily, but they're very rich culturally. And I think that's what I would like to take away from them, that they are just amazingly strong, lovely people.
Do you have a website?
Yes. It's www.theyupikway.com.
Beth Edwards, thank you very much for calling all the way from Louisville, Kentucky. Her film is called The Yupik Way. It's going to be on 360 North Television Wednesday night at 8 o'clock and at 11, and also Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Beth, thank you very much for being on the air with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 10th of October, 2011. Today is Columbus Day. It was on the 12th of October, 1492, Christopher Columbus landed on an island in what is now the Bahamas. For hundreds of years, Europeans had traded with China and India along the Silk Road. An overland trade route ran through Central Asia. The Mongol Empire controlled it, and under Mongol rule, the Silk Road was safe to travel. But then the Ottoman Empire invaded Constantinople, 1453, blocked European access to trade routes. So they were looking for a new trade route to Asia. Some explorers headed east, traveling down and around Africa. Columbus wanted to head west. King Ferdinand of Spain was skeptical about Columbus's plan because he felt that Columbus was way off in his theory of the Earth's circumference, and that Asia was much further west than Columbus had calculated. Ferdinand was right about that. But eventually he and his wife Isabella changed their minds. They sponsored Columbus. He sailed from Spain August the 3rd on the Santa Maria, the Niña, and the Pinta. And in the early morning hours, October the 12th, the captain of the Pinta, Juan Alonso Pinzon, spotted land. Ferdinand and Isabella had promised a lifetime pension to the first person to spot land, and Columbus cheated Pinzon out of his pension by claiming that he, Columbus, had actually seen land the night before. The island they landed on is part of the Bahamas, but Columbus was convinced he'd made it all the way to Asia, and he called the indigenous people Indians. It's the birthday of the playwright Harold Pinter, born London, 1930, wrote his first play, The Room, in just 4 days in 1957. It was his second play, The Birthday Party, that made him famous in 1958. Though it was a failure when it opened in London, panned by critics, very few people went to see it. It closed after 8 performances. Today it is considered a classic. Harold Pinter, whose writing style is so distinctive, a sinister mood, long pauses, characters who all have different versions of the same event, that there is an adjective, Pinteresque, referring to it, and referring to things like it. The Guardian defined Pinteresque as a cryptically mysterious situation imbued with hidden menace. Pinter wrote 29 plays in all, died in 2008 at the age of 78. Harold Pinter, who said, "How can you write a happy play? Drama is about conflict and general degrees of perturbation, disarray. I've never been able to write a happy play, but I've been able to enjoy a happy life." Here's a poem for today by David Ignato, Lost Childhood. How is it possible I, a father, yet a child of my father? I grew panicky and thought of running away, but knew I would be scorned for it by my father. I stood and listened to myself being called Dad. How ridiculous it sounded. But in front of me, asking for attention, how could I, a child, ignore this child's plea? I lifted him into my arms and hugged him as I would have wanted my father to hug me, and it was as though satisfying my own lost childhood. Lost Childhood by David Ignato from Against the Evidence, selected in New Poems 1934 to 1994, published by Wesleyan University Press. Used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Constant Contact, combining the power of email marketing and social media for more customers and more time back on your clock. ConstantContact.com. And by Novo Nordisk, since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Bartlett Regional Hospital invites you to join us at this year's Women's Health Forum, presented by Cancer Connection. This year's keynote speaker will be certified genetic counselor Maggie Miller, discussing the connection between genetics and cancer. We're providing a free and healthy lunch for all who attend, and there will be plenty of time for your questions following the presentation. The date is Saturday, October 15th from 11 to 2 at Centennial Hall. The Women's Health Forum is free and open to the public. Don't miss it.
Time is 3:21 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. About a week or so, my friend Cliff Nelson gave me a call and said he's talking to a guy named Remus who's working on a sailboat trip around the world, and he's going to get started here in Sitka area in the spring, and he's down in the station here today, and he's going to tell us a little bit about it. Remus Malicious, thank you very much for being in the station with us today. Tell me about your trip, if you could, please. Tell me about your background. You left the Soviet Union in 1988.
I left because of the hope, freedom to travel, you know, and I work for Japanese language interpreter, and I have too much freedom, and I love to travel, you know, always my was. I start to travel since 14. I travel on the train, on the roof, in Soviet Union when I was very young, and always I want to travel. Always my dream was to travel, to see world, to explore continent, to see, you know, beauties and everything, you know, this big education to me always was. My parents always said, son, need to travel more, to explore, to see world, you know, how they look. I always loved geography so much. I know all these beautiful island names and all, you know, continents and oceans and always. But that time was not dream by sailboat. When I came to United States, I planned to go to United States. It was 1988, and I decided to go to United States. I ran in Moscow in embassy to United States embassy, you know, and I said I want to go right now. I don't want to back, and beat the time, you know, Soviet, you know, soldiers. They beat me because not allowed to go United Embassy straight, you know, and I ran to straight, you know, and quite a bit beat me, you know, and then, you know, and took a few days, and I left, you know, Soviet Union, you know, country, you know, United States took me, you know, political asylum, basically, status of refugee, political, and this was 1988, June 21. And I arrived to New York, and was very happy, you know, when I landed at night in New York, you know, skyscrapers. And I have never seen the United States, you know, and they me provided hotel, you know, beginning, you know. Then I connected Russian people, you know, living communities, you know, Russian. I work in restaurants, and then after that 6 months, I did a little bit money. I make it, then I moved to Hawaii. You know, I lived for 10 years in Hawaii islands, mostly Maui and Honolulu. And I lived in Kailua Corner too, in the big island of Hawaii. After that, I back again to mainland I saved money a little bit. I worked in Hawaii, you know. And I do not spoke English that time, absolutely. When I came first year, I learned all United States. I studied very hard English. I want to learn, because this is the United States, I need to know language. Only English, and I studied very hard. And then, you know, back to Florida, then I went to 89 to until 91 to Virgin Islands, Caribbean Islands, and live in St. Thomas for 2 years. Over there, work in a jewelry store, couple of years, basically only 6 months, you know, summer jobs, and then back by plane to Hawaii, and work again in Hawaii, and then, you know, I explore all Hawaiian Islands, six in that moment. I work and travel, and then I went to Guam Island and live another 2 years in Guam.
You seem to have been a traveler.
Yes, and I travel quite many often, you know, and work 6 months, travel, work 6 months, travel, and then I learned by sailboat sailing, you know. I met, you know, from a captain from Finland on the Finnish flag in Guam. Said, "Do you like to go to Hawaii and sailing?" I never did before in sailing. Says, "Yeah, I would like to learn." You know, he took me because wife seasickness was, and he took me sailing, you know, to Hawaii, and I sailed long distance. You know, I saw storm and a gale that moment, and then in 1903, I sailed from Hawaii, Kanalei Bay, to Victoria, Canada. This person was a gentleman from Poland, you know, but he's held under American flag because he's already a citizen of United States was, you know. So he took another trip on 42-foot sailboat to Victoria, Canada. I learned more about sailboat sailing, you know, and I sailed kind 91, 92, 93, kind 3 years period. After 3 years, after 1903, I never sailed on the sailboat because I live in Hawaii, then I'm back mainland, you know, met girlfriend, I live in, you know, Idaho, in Montana, then we moved to San Francisco, you know, lived last 6 years. I work for security, professional technical service incorporation. I work in San Francisco for 5 years. I lived 6 years in San Francisco, and I look marina San Francisco. I working all over. I want to buy a sailboat. I have money already at the time because I worked, you know, I saved, you know, but I cannot afford to cost so much money in a Bay Area to buy a sailboat, you know, where I want. Then I decide, I look on the internet, I have it Hable, you know, subscribe, you know, in San Francisco. I look on the internet, oh, Juno has very good and expensive sailboats in harbors. I look and I bought a ticket. That time was layoffs last, so that's why job I quit, because it was layoffs already, you know, a few hours to only work, and I quit the job, and I bought a ticket, and I came to Juno on June 13 to Juneau, Alaska.
And your boat is now in the Taku Harbor area?
Yeah, now in Taku Harbor because this was very expensive fees. You know, I cannot afford to pay $200 my sailboat cost, and I went to Taku Harbor. I'm basically heading to Pittsburgh, you know, or Tanikea, somewhere where any expensive, you know, fees, you know, cost for winter, you know. You know, then I springtime, I move probably, you know, to Sitka. When I will be departure from Sitka, you know, to around the world, yeah.
That's amazing. You get to do it all by yourself?
Yeah, I will by myself and alone. I have a plan already. How I go in, you know. My plan will be straight to Hawaii from Sitka. I stop supply food and then, you know, continue. Basically, maybe need repairs. We see. We don't know right now. And then my plan to go Cape Cod non-stop, Cape Cod. It's about South America, Cape Cod. It's called the deadly, you know, graveyard. It's very dangerous. It's very, all the time dangerous. Force gales force and hurricane force and 50-foot wall, you know, straight is very, very dangerous, you know. But I want to go. My strong desire, and I must go, because I live one life, one day in life, you know. I want to do, you know, and I want to publish in the book. I want to on the media. I want the newspaper all over America. I want to know every single person what I want to do, you know.
And you're looking for sponsors and other
ways? Yeah, I'm looking for sponsors and need help, need sponsor, need individual who can help, need who can support me, you know, all around the world, whatever it takes, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you're staying with Richard in North Danhauer at the present time?
Yeah, so present time on this address, I stay in North Douglas Highway.
So if you need more information about Remus's trip, you can give them a call at 586-4701. How long do you think this is going to take you?
I would say if everything is okay, goes, you know, I would say maybe 1 year or more, a little bit, you know. Depends how long I stay in Hawaii, you know, or maybe 1 week maybe, or a couple of weeks or, and then, you know, back. I probably stop in Guam Island, and then, you know, to Aleutian, and then back to Juneau, Alaska. So maybe one year, maybe more, a little bit, yeah, takes, you know.
All right, Remus Malicious, thank you for coming by the station today, and good luck in your travels. And when you come back, come on back, and we'll put you on the radio show.
Thank you so much.
And that phone number of the Downhowers is 586-4701 if you need more information about Remus's trip around the world by sailboat solo. Time is 3:33, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Jenny Fremlin from Alaska Litho, here to talk about the Alaska Litho Photo Contest and more. Jenny, thank you very much for coming down the station today.
Thank you for having me.
So, photo contest details first, if you want to, please.
Well, the Alaska Litho poster calendar is something that we print every year, and so we're doing a digital photo contest this year. And the theme is Inspire. We're taking submissions of photos through this Friday, October 14th. And then we're going to have public viewing of the top photos on first Friday, November 4th, and let people vote to see which ones make the final 12.
Any hints of them, any images in particular you're looking for?
Well, we're looking for what inspires you in Alaska. So it's sort of an interpretation that you can take, but we're looking for outdoor images. There's pretty much been an ongoing theme of outdoor photographs in the calendars, so inspirational outdoor photography.
Are they supposed to be submitted electronically?
Yes, they're digital photographs this year, and so it's 300 dpi. The minimum size is 5 by 3.5 inches, and they can be sent to photos@aklitho.com.
And what's the prize?
The grand prize is $250 and being featured on the calendar. And then there are 11 runners-up that go also in the desktop calendar, and that's $65, as well as being in the calendar. And both of those are distributed throughout Southeast Alaska.
So you must know a lot about printing digital images. What's all the stuff about DPI anyway? What does that mean?
DPI means dots per inch, and that's how you build a photograph on a piece of paper. It's how many dots of ink go in each inch.
So you're the in charge of the Alaska Lithomedia Support Services these days?
I am. Yeah, we just opened our office downtown. We were just setting it up today, and we're doing support services for all sorts of media now. So print is a really creative part of all media plans, and we're also working with social media and marketing and any kind of media production and development as well as training.
Cool. More and more people are going digital these days as far as their images and graphic needs are concerned.
Right, yeah.
You guys have some upcoming seminars as well?
We do. We're starting on First Fridays as well. So November 4th, when we have the display to open to public voting for these images that will be on the poster calendar, we're also going to have get started running with social media first at Centennial Hall. And so that will be from noon to 4 before First Friday opens. And we'll be going through how to choose which social media to use and how to build your image and which ones work best for different businesses and different goals.
When people submit photos for reproduction at Alaska Lutheran, what's the most common mistake they make?
Maybe sending in too small of a file. Sometimes you want to send in your original file so that it can be as big and as glorious as you want it printed. And a lot of times you'll have thumbnail images and emailed images, and so you want to send in the original one for printing. Definitely.
So iPhones probably will not take a quality picture.
I don't know how well they do for printing. I think they have a pretty good, I think some of them are six megapixels or something. I think that they might print okay, but I'm not positive about that.
Cool. Junior Vermeulen, thank you for coming down and talking about your photo contest and also your support seminars. What other seminars are coming up in the future?
We're doing one in December, also on First Friday, and it's going to be about how you connect with audiences through media, so how you build relationships through media and how you can connect with people, how that works with marketing materials and things like that.
And where's your new shop downtown?
It's at 228 Seward Street, right across from the Canvas at Reach.
And Jenny Freeman, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Well, I think that these poster calendars just have a great history that is something exciting to me. It started in the 80s when the Juno Douglas Bridge was built and showed the old bridge and the new bridge. And they've featured original art from different artists since then. So I think that being featured on these calendars is a really exciting opportunity to be distributed.
And the website, again, or the email for people to email pictures?
The website is aklitho.com, and the email address is photos@aklitho.com.
If you have questions, can they give you a call?
Sure, 586-3170.
Jenny Freeman from Alaska Litho, thank you so much for coming down.
Great, thank you.
I am spirit of you.
I am spirit of you.
I am spirit of you.
I am a leader.
Volunteer.
I give back to my community.
Culture, I am spirit.
I am spirit of you.
I am spirit of you.
Here's my story. Here are stories.
An all-girl group of West Anchorage High School photography students mill about a cafe on a sunny evening for a First Friday Art Walk event. Their best shots and the favorites taken by their sister school classmates hang in frames on the walls around them. This collection of images were taken during cultural exchanges these teens made with youth from the village of Brevig Mission on the Seward Peninsula. Through the Alaska Humanities Forum's Sister School Exchange, these four urban kids spent time in the bush and later played host when their new friends visited Alaska's largest city. Mandy Davis is the urban teens photography teacher. This is the second group of exchangees she's ushered through the program.
I think that they learn a lot about themselves. I think that they don't know how they're going to react, and they just think, oh, either it's a vacation, or they think, oh man, this is going to be really hard. But what I think that is unexpected for them is that they often are like, wow, this is really awesome, and, you know, I want to go back, or this way of life isn't, you know, so different than ours.
18-year-old West High student Emma Steinzig says along with searching for interesting images while she was in Brevig, she also did a lot of instructing with the friends she made there.
You kind of have to help them learn how to take a good photo. We learn a lot in Photo 1
about like mergers, not have a merger in the photo, and kind of keep your picture interesting.
Other West High student photographers include Allison Lubeck, Annalise Decker, and Andrea Looper. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
I am a teenager.
I am an Alaskan. I give back.
Do you see me? Recognize youth ages 12 to 19 at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
Now 20 years young in the capital city, Theater in the Rough presents Shakespeare's delightful A Midsummer Night's Dream in McPheeters Hall. Opens this Friday, October 14th. Runs Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 7:30 till November 5th. With two Sunday matinees, October 30th and November 6th at 2. Seating is limited. We'll have tickets at the door, but advance tickets are at Hearthside Books and the Jack.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving caramel apple sundaes and parfaits. McDonald's is open daily in the valley on Trout Street.
What is Tavaka? A dance group of adrenaline-powered, percussion-pulsed, happy people. Bringing ancient South Pacific traditions to the modern world, the dynamic dancers of Tavaka perform Sunday, October 16th at the JDHS Auditorium. Tavaka, the true soul of Polynesia, presented by Juno Arts and Humanities Council and sponsored by LG, Rayfield, and Mertz.
music of Tabaka. They'll be performing a concert on Sunday, October 16th at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium, in a concert brought to you by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. If you need more information on that or a ticket, call them at 586-2787 or log on to their website, www.jahc.org. At Sunday night, coming up tomorrow night, is a film festival put on by the Juno Pride Chorus. In the studio with me are Leslie Wood and Rachel Zond. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Yes, thank you.
So first of all, tell me about the Pride Chorus, if you could, please, Leslie.
Well, the Pride Chorus has been together since October 11th, 1997. So tomorrow is our 14th birthday. And we've been singing together. We're a chorus of about 40 strong right now this year. And we've been pretty much around 25 to 35 people singing each year for 14 years. And there's quite a few members in the chorus that have been around for quite a while with us singing.
And what kind of songs do you sing?
Well, we sing a variety of music, mostly along the themes of women's strength, gay and lesbian issues, peace and justice. This year our theme is courage and journey, and so we have quite a few songs that kind of loosely talk about those themes.
And the film festival tomorrow night is based on the theme of Coming Out Day.
Yes, tomorrow is National Coming Out Day. And National Coming Out Day started in 1988 in commemoration of March on Washington that happened the year before in 87 on October 11th. The LGBT community marched on in Washington, D.C. to raise awareness and to gain civil rights. And so every year there's a National Coming Out Day, which is a day for people to show their support for their lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgendered friends and family and coworkers and parents. And it's also a way, it challenges us all to come out in some way, I think, but it's mostly geared towards lesbian and gay and bisexual issues coming out.
Must be a bit of a challenge. People across the country to for National Coming Out Day.
It's I don't think it's a very widely known celebration, but I think it is celebrated in many countries, not just the United States, and it's one way for us to get out there and show our support.
Mm-hmm. And part of the deal going on tomorrow, it's a film festival and it's a fundraiser, isn't it?
Yes, it's a fundraiser for the Pride Chorus to go to Denver next summer for the Gala Choruses, an international event where gay and lesbian choruses from all around the world will be meeting and singing for a big festival. And so this is one of the first of our fundraisers here in Juneau to help us get to Denver.
And how many films in the film festival tomorrow night?
We've got six films that are from gay and lesbian film festivals, and one film that will be telling people a little bit about the experience of a gala festival. So there are three lesbian films and three gay films, and they have all had numerous awards from different types of film festivals.
And the names of them?
Let's see, we've got... Parental Guidance, Tech Support, and Public Relations are three of the lesbian films that we're going to be showing. And, they have lots of different awards from different festivals. And let's see, the gay films we have are Gaby, Curious Thing, and Bedfellows.
These films start at 6:30?
And, yes, the festival starts at 6:30, and we will also have an intermission, and the Pride Chorus will be singing two songs.
Well, how much does it cost to get in?
It is free, but donations are gratefully accepted, and there will also be snacks. And, again, donations will be gratefully accepted for those.
This is happening where?
The Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater.
All right, and that's happening tomorrow night at 6:30. And there's some upcoming concerts in the not-so-near future, but coming soon to a capital city near you.
Yeah, we are planning... in the works is a national a Memorial Day of World AIDS Day, and that happens December 1st. And we sang at the local event last year, and we're planning on something similar this year. That will be at the Baranoff on December 1st. And then we're planning our spring concert in April 21st, and that will include a silent auction, fundraiser, and different, maybe a raffle. We don't know. We're trying to figure out if we can do a raffle at this point. And we are also going to be doing Singing Valentines around Valentine's Day. So that's a way for somebody to hire members of the chorus to come and sing for their sweetheart at work or at the restaurant or somewhere where they can be thoroughly embarrassed and have a lot of fun. We've done that in the past, and it's been a lot of fun. We've sung in all sorts of places, and we sing, we send Singing Valentines over the phone too, and that's a fun way to reach out to people from all across the country.
Not as embarrassing.
It's not as embarrassing.
All right, the Pride Chorus Film Festival going on tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. Ticket is by donation. You're encouraged to donate as much as you feel like you want to. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
Yes, I just wanted to say that, just to reiterate what Rachel said about the Pride Chorus singing tomorrow, we have been rehearsing for about a month and a half, and so we have two songs that are a little bit prepared to sing, and we're going to put ourselves out there and sing for the public, and hopefully that will draw some people in to see the films that we have, too.
I think we have a little bit of time if you want to go into detail about some of the films, Rachel.
All right. Well, I'll just tell you some of the film festivals that they've come from. There's the Q Fest in Anaheim, California, the Iris Prize Festival, Seattle International Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Let me see, what about some other ones? Outfest and North Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, Palm Beach International Film Festival, Pittsburgh Lesbian and Gay Film Festival, Fresno Real Pride, and that's R-E-E-L, of course. Got to get a little pun in there.
So some of the movies are dealing with issues of, you know, falling in love and finding the right person to be with. Some of the issues are around having children as a gay, as a straight person or a gay person. And then there's some that are pretty funny that are, you know, people will just be rolling in the aisles. Some one of them, parental guidance, is the parents are having a hard time, and the children are discussing their parents in some very adult emotional intelligent language. It's really quite cute. And so we're going to start with the lesbian films, starting at 6:30, and then we'll show the little film about Gayla. It's a 12-minute segment that talks about Gayla festivals. And then there'll be an intermission, and then the Pride Chorus will sing, and then we'll show the gay films. And there's about 30 minutes of films for the lesbian and for the gay film. So there's about an hour worth of films, and then a 12-minute segment on Gayla, and then the Pride Chorus singing. So it should be a fun night. We'll be over about 8:30 or so.
Are these films for all ages?
No, I would suggest that these are adult movies. I wouldn't suggest bringing children, only because it deals with sexual themes, and there's some sex scenes that happen, and so it's pretty adult humor and adult issues.
The Pride Chorus Film Festival tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Film Festival, Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater.
Yes.
Is there a website at all for the Pride Chorus at all?
Not yet, but we're on Facebook, and we are trying to get a website up and running this year.
All right. Thank you, Rachel and Leslie, for coming down the station here.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. What are these birds? And why are they so angry?
Well, their eggs were stolen by a bunch of pigs. And the birds want them back. Now, you can probably tell that these aren't real birds. They're from the game Angry Birds. You may even have this game on your smartphone or other electronic device. Using a virtual slingshot, you hurl a variety of birds at the offending pig. It's an increasingly difficult and complex physics game. More than 40 million people play the game every month. And every day, nearly 3.5 million hours are spent playing Angry Birds. Now, we don't know of too many birds whose eggs are actually stolen by pigs. But no bird is happy when its eggs are stolen. Listen to this American robin, sounding its alarm. Here's a pair of angry peregrine falcons, protecting their nest. And the ultimate angry bird? The American crow, mobbing a red-tailed hawk. Strangely enough, because the game was developed in Finland, the signature angry bird actually looks like the northern cardinal of North America. You can see photos of some real-life angry birds on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
What is it good for? Nothing. Unless it's the Battle of the Bands happening this Saturday night, 9 o'clock at the Jack. 8 great local bands battling it out for a title of Best Band in Juneau. It's $15 at the door. It's an all-ages event with a full beer garden. 2 stages, 8 bands, $15, and 4 hours. It's the Battle of the Bands, coming October 15th to the Jack.
Tonight on 360 North, at 6 p.m., watch the BBC World News, then Newsline from NHK Japan at 6:30. At 7 p.m., get an update from the BBC World News Late Edition and Alaska Weather at 7:30. Science for Alaska at 8 brings us Whale Tales with Dr. Jan Straley, followed at 9:30 by a World Ocean Day special on Alaska seabirds. It's a great way to look at science and a great way to look at Alaska tonight on 360 North.
And you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also online at www.ktuo.org. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Don't forget tonight a special program called Kids These Days. It's starting at 7 o'clock. Also, if you've got a top 5 best films, we'll play that with people's listeners' lists on Wednesday during the Juneau afternoon. So if you'd like to call up and leave your list, call me at 463-6425. That is 463-6425. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will be your guest host. He'll talk to members of Tavaka, performing next Sunday at the Juneau Douglas High School Auditorium. Beth Weigel and Kristen Romanoff will be here with an update on the Juneau Children Outdoor Community Coalition. Mayor Levis Chuck from the Glory Hole will have a list of winter needs. We'll also find out about the upcoming Family Night at Gastineau School with guest Mary Folletti. At Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain, low temperatures around 38 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 48 degrees. Looks like the forecast for Wednesday, rain, high temperatures around 49 degrees.